Our next challenge is the 12 apostles, which we're starting today because of Matthew. So, and we're, go ahead, guys. Meet me back there at the door, and we can go to children's worship.
Excellent. All right. Ben Ballier, did you want a chance? Oh, sorry. Did a fine job, fine job. Now, I know the Ten Commandments pretty well. The 12 Apostles, not so good, so I'll have to sing the song, too, that they learn. Well, are we ready to have some fun this morning? Try to start a little different this morning. I don't know. We'll see. I want to begin by talking about a scenario that I'm assuming has happened to all of us in one way or another. You see someone from across the way. Maybe it's walking down the street. Maybe it's at the mall. Maybe it's at school. Somewhere you see somebody, and you're like, oh, I can't believe it's so-and-so. And you go over, and you get really close to them, and you realize, oh, that's somebody else, and you have to walk away. If it's a really uncomfortable situation, you'll actually start talking to the person or shake their hands or, God forbid, give them a hug, and somewhere you have that horrifying reality that this is not the person that I... It's happened to all of us, right? This is not who I thought it would be. Does anybody have a good example of this? Anybody? I'm sure it... Val? Hey, strange guy. Ben? Oh, it's a her too, so that's awkward even more. Yeah. Reports you to the principal right away. That's awkward. Anybody else have a good story of this? I will brag on my wife. She's the master at this. You are so good at doing this and then just playing it off like, oh, yeah, somebody, I thought it was somebody else. And I'm horrified whenever it happens to me, but she's just able to just do it. Well, you know, sometimes it's an honest mistake because they, you know, from the back they have the similar hairline or similar hairdo, or maybe you recognize their clothing and you think, oh, that's what, you know, that so-and-so wears or whatever. But sometimes, they just, honest to goodness, look just like the person. That's happened to me before, where I'm like, there's two brothers, Brian knows that, and I think, John, you know, the Negley brothers. Rick is a pastor up at Berlin, and he has a twin brother who works up at a bike shop. And if you sit all the time, I've been with one of them, and someone will come up to him, and they assume that, hey, how's the bike shop going? Well, I'm actually a pastor over at Berlin. How's the church going? Well, actually, I run the bike shop. It's incredible. So we have a word for this. The word is doppelganger, right? You guys know what a doppelganger is? Go ahead, Lynn, let's get started with our slideshow this morning. Go ahead to the next one. I think we have a definition of doppelganger. It's a noun. It's an apparition or a double of a living person. Like, these are the ones that just, man, you see them and you're like, oh, that looks just like somebody. And we're a small church, but I had to kind of try a little bit. But we have some famous doppelgangers in our church, you may or may not realize. So we're going to go through these, Lynn. Did you know Mike Schreiber is actually on The Walking Dead? Like, this guy looks just like Mike Schreiber. I mean, I couldn't even find, like, a really good picture of it. And then now this was a little eerie because not just the brown stuff, but, like, they sort of, I mean, there's a little something there. What's the next one? Now, this was a little eerie. Pat Lucas, if you go back to the Laverne and Shirley days, I don't know, maybe. What's the next one? Now, this one's kind of gone around and round, but it is the Arnold this week, so, you know, we'll have to get that out there. Now, this is an oldie but a goodie. Like, this is just one of the creepiest ones ever. Ron, that is just crazy. Now, Lee Dameron actually could have possibly starred in the band Mumford & Sons. What's the next one? Dalton's not here, but that one is true on so many levels. I think we have another one. Yeah, Alex isn't here, but he looks so much like... I mean, it's just a hair color, really. But there's a lot of stuff there. I think Clementine looks a lot like Punky Brewster. May just be me. And then what about this one? Now, maybe you can't see it, but click the next slide. It'll help us a little bit. Like, maybe Woody is still among us. Crazy, crazy, crazy. You know, jeans are a weird thing. Like, it's just an odd thing, jeans. And I'm talking about blue jeans. I'm talking about the DNA that makes us who we are is just really odd. And I tell you when you can really see this is when you go to a family reunion. Like, if you're just in your nuclear family, you know, everybody, oh, your son or your daughter looks just like you. You know, you look a little bit like your brother. I mean, you get that. But when you go to a family reunion and you see, like, 50 people with the same nose or 100 people that have the same kind of structure of their eyes, you realize that our genes are just really strong. And I thought about it just among us. Like, look at the Maynard family. Like, they have a strong gene running down that line, but not as strong as the Lucas gene, for goodness sakes. Now, Bailey and Kellen left, but that is a strong, strong gene. Now, Clark and I, all the time, people come up to us and say, oh, you have got to be Clark's dad. Or Mary Beth and Clementine. Cecilia, I think, is kind of this hybrid thing between both of us. But if I could, like, contemporize a picture of Mary Beth from when she was a child, you would not be able to tell the difference between her and Clementine. Look at Grant and Kurt sitting next to each other. Like, this is just a strong resonance. Sometimes it's creepy. But I think all of us will agree that no one has stronger genes than these guys right here, the Ballyard family. Like, if you see, Jan Callie will post the pictures of their kids, and it's, Brian, you guys have got something weird in your family. That is some strong, strong genes. Now, we get the, like, the physical stuff. I mean, we understand that, and we talk about that all the time. But it's really weird is how genes affect our personalities, our mannerisms, how we talk. I mean, we have these kind of, our communities affect us, whether we like to admit it or not. And we have this kind of vernacular, and we know kind of like regional accents and things like that, but even within our families, there are ways that we talk that no one else kind of talks like. That's why, you know, when you get married or you start dating and you kind of get to know another family, you begin to find kind of the idiosyncrasies of your own family. And sometimes it's just, you know, we talk about nature and nurture. Sometimes it's just nurture, but sometimes it's the genetic coding inside of us. And one of the strangest things that I've ever had occur to me, or kind of one of these light bulb moments, I was out, I think it was at the Dameron's house, and I saw Lee Dameron walking across the yard. And I thought, he walks just like his dad. Like, what a weird thing to think about. But it's true, like, even our gait, even the way that we walk can be similar to the people that we are embedded with their genetic coding. And so we're going to talk about community. And actually, whether you realize it or not, we've been talking about community all year. Because when you think about it, in the book of Acts, which was our topic of discussion in January, it's all about the community of God. It's all about God's community as revealed in the church in the first century. And then we turned the page to Exodus, and it seemed like it was a completely different topic. I mean, like Chris said this morning, we're talking about ephods and, you know, priestly garb and all this. What does it have to do? But really, at the heart of Exodus, it's another commentary on a community, the community of God. And I think, you know, there's a whole topic or a whole science dedicated to the study of communities. We call it sociology. And in some ways, I kind of feel like Acts and Exodus are sociological commentaries. I just wanted to work that word in this morning, right? That was for you, JJ. Sociological commentaries, right? It's just, they're stories about the people of God. And we started in the New Testament, but we just as easily could have started with Exodus and then turned to Acts. But that has the similarity of all being about people who were captivated by and trying to be like this God that they know or serve or trying to get to know. The question that first of all, let me kind of, I've got a couple passages just real quickly to kind of try to make that point. The first one's from Exodus chapter 12. This is going to kind of help kind of come full circle for this discussion that we're going to have this morning. But in Exodus chapter 12, and Chris confessed that he's been reading Exodus and spent time in it. And if you spent any time reading it, then this is the kind of stuff that you saw. In Exodus chapter 12, beginning in verse 31, during the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship the God as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you've said and go and bless me." And the Egyptians urged the people to hurry up and get out of there. Remember, this is just after all the plagues. They wanted them out of there. Down in verse 37, the Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, where they were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Many of the other people went up with them, as well as large droves of livestock and flocks and all these kinds of things. That's the kind of stuff that we saw in Exodus. This is just what the community did. That was kind of the story of God's people in Exodus. In Acts, it's kind of the similar thing. Another passage that we spent a little bit of time in back in January, Acts chapter 2 and verse 42 and following. They, talking about the community, devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. Everybody was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as they had a need. And on and on and on the description goes. These are descriptions about the people of God. This is what they did. This is the sociological commentary, if you will. And it might be overstating it a little bit to say that. But hopefully you get what I'm kind of talking about. They describe what happened within the community. And so what we're going to kind of explore this morning, the question we're going to ask is, why did the people act the way that they did? So Exodus and Acts give us kind of the description of what happened. And so we want to kind of delve back and say, but why did they do that? What was in their DNA? Said another way, we're going to ask the question, why does Lee Dameron walk like his dad? Like, what is it about that? Why did the people in Acts do life the way that they did? Exodus is kind of a continuation into Acts, and so we'll focus more on Acts, but why did they live and do the things that they did? And maybe you're thinking, if you're quite sharp this morning, this will be a short sermon because it's quite obvious why they did the things they did, right? They did what they did because of Jesus. It's on every page in Acts. The inspiration from the Holy Spirit, from seeing Jesus live his life and teach his teachings, and then be buried, and then believe in the resurrection. And so that shaped the kind of people that they were to be. In Acts chapter 11, verse 26, we're told that it was in Antioch that the people of Christ were first called Christians. You ever think about that? I mean, Acts begins in chapter 2 with Peter getting up and preaching on Pentecost. He was kind of the focal point. And then later on, we learned about the conversion of Paul, and he kind of becomes the focal point. But nobody was baptized into Peter. Nobody was baptized into Paul. They weren't called Paulites or Peterites or even John the Baptistites, even though they had some followers later on in Acts who did follow John the Baptist. They were corrected and said, yes, but he was just a forerunner of Christ. And so the name that they take is Christ, a Greek word, Christos, which means anointed. It's the same word in Hebrew that's Messiah, Mashiach, means anointed. We're the ones who are going to look like the Christ. And maybe they assumed that name themselves, or maybe, and this would be super cool, right, if the other people around them gave them that name. Hey, they kind of resemble that Jesus guy. We'll just call them what they are. They're Christians. They're Christ-like people. So this morning, we're going to delve into that idea a little bit more, because I think the message that I want to share with you this morning is that the church is supposed to be the doppelganger of Jesus. Like, we're supposed to be the doppelganger. People are supposed to look at the church and how we live life and say, hey, that looks like the Jesus guy. That is what Jesus is supposed to look like. It looks like these people. Just like when you go to a family reunion, they all have the Dellinger nose. My mom's family, the Dellinger nose. Clark has it. I have it. My brother has it. And it's unavoidable. And so when we get together, our church assemblies are like a reunion where we get together and it's like, yeah, there's the Damerons and there's the Schreibers and there's the Lucas and there's the Morrows. We all kind of share the DNA, but it's not a physical DNA. It's the spiritual components that make our lives dedicated to Christ. And guess what? This is the part that's missing for so many people. There's implications. Like, if that's the life that we choose, then our lives should look a certain way. Which brings us to the story of Matthew. Before we get to Matthew, though, I want to show some more pictures, because pictures are fun. Just like Angie said, it helps us learn. What's the next slide? People are looking for the image of Christ everywhere. Like, I found this, just Google search online. You see Jesus in the clouds? I'll give you another 10 seconds. It's circled, so if you can't find it, you know, you get your eyes checked. All right, what's the next one? You can find them from space as you look from satellite pictures of the cornfields or bean fields or whatever kind of field this is. There he is again. On toast, of course. The image of Christ is in toast. On grapes, apparently. I didn't have to look very hard for these, by the way. These are just kind of everywhere. And then, of course, potato chips, tortilla. This one was pretty impressive, you know, the tortilla. I think that's the last one, isn't it? That people are looking for the image of Jesus everywhere. And this morning, we want to kind of come to the terms or the reality that we, all of us, we're supposed to be that image. Like, that's what when we are baptized into Christ and say, I want to identify my life with Him. And this, by the way, is why it's a major decision. This isn't something that when you're 10 years old, you go, this is what I want to do, yeah. No, this is like, hey, this is going to shape your life forever. And there's going to be times where it's going to be difficult. And you're not always going to be able to do the things that you want to do. Are you sure that this is what you want to do? And when you say, yes, this is what I want to do, then your life changes pathway. Suddenly, your life is going to be different. And what I did this week, I'm better than Chris. I read through the whole book of Matthew. Hopefully, all of us will get a chance to read through it at least once or twice this month. And one of the things that I would encourage you to do is read through the book of Matthew and help ask yourself the question, how is this story shaping the life that I live? Because when we come together as Christians, we come from all different walks of life. Some of us are more affluent than others. Some of us have different jobs than others. Some of us have different education than others. Some of us have very different backgrounds. And all that helps shape, just like those genes that are in us, they shape who we are. But we all have the DNA coding of being a child of God. Like, all of us have that. That's the beautiful story of Genesis. We are all created in His image. So if you meet somebody who feels like, because of their other circumstances, they're too far gone, I can't do this, we can easily open the Bible and say, no, you can do this. I know that it's been battered, and that image inside of you has been battered and damaged and bruised, but you can still do that. You can still live this life that Christ has called you to live. And all of us are compelled to live this way. And so, the bulk of my teaching this morning, I just wanted to come directly from the words of Matthew. And what I tried to do is kind of group some of these teachings in a couple different big chunks so that you could see that there are some threads of thinking or thoughts that goes through Matthew that informs the life that we're called to live. And I think the first one, and it's unavoidable when you read Matthew, is that the way of Jesus is not an easy way. Remember how the book ends, right? He dies. He's not only does he die, he's killed because the way of Jesus is not easy. Now, he's resurrected, and we'll get to the good news here in a minute, but let's acknowledge the fact that the way of Jesus is not easy. Listen to some of these teachings. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And anyone who doesn't take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, and you don't have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. It seems to me that if Christ is the one that inspires the life of Acts, He inspires the life of the church, then one of the first things we have to acknowledge is that this is not an easy life. And if the life of Christ seems to come easy to us, then the chances are we may not be doing it the right way. mean, the New Testament is just full of the agony, the agonizing challenge of the flesh versus the spirit, and this pull to kind of want to do the things that we want to do, but those not always being beneficial to us. It's what this season of Lent is. It's a recognition of our humanity. It's a recognition that the things that we want and we desire, they're not always good for us. That's, again, the story in the garden. Adam and Eve want to eat this tree, the only tree they're not supposed to eat from. They're so inquisitive. They just want to know. And they can't stand God to come along and say, I understand that you don't want to, but it's not good for you. And so we face that same dilemma over and over and over again in our lives. And the Bible says in Matthew that it's not always easy. That sometimes it's difficult. Actually, it's Jesus in his teaching on the Sermon on the Mount says, the road to destruction is really wide. That's the easy way. It's the gate. It's the narrow way. That's the way of Christ that's more difficult and challenging. The way you're choosing is not popular. It's the selfless way. The second point that I think that we see in this book of Matthew is that the way of Jesus is about selflessness. Listen to some of these passages. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Therefore, don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. I tell you the truth, that unless you become like little children and change, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Love your neighbor as yourself. All of the law and all of the prophets hang on these two commandments. I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. Everything in our culture seems to scream, me, 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 I am the center of attention. It's all about me. Even our, since we're in the political season, even our political process is all about, what can I do for you? And you need to vote for the candidate who's going to be best for you. That is exactly what Jesus said we're not about as Christians. We're about everyone else. And it screams, there is no message in the Bible that screams more contrary to our culture than this. I mean, imagine if in the next debate, the question was asked, Jesus said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. How are you going to espouse that in your presidency? Everyone would, their voter decline would go immediate, because we don't want a humble leader. What a powerful leader. What's somebody who's going to be strong? Now, Jesus was strong, so you can be humble and strong, but I think you get what I'm saying. How do we empty ourselves? This is so difficult. And it's a shame that we talk about so many other things in church, because this is probably the most difficult disease that we have to fight, is our own selfish desires. I mean, we often think about what's going to be better for my family. We often think about what's going to be better for my career. We often think about what's going to be best for me, for me, for me. When do we stop and think about everybody else? I mean, think about how challenging it is to empathize and really come to terms with the fact that just about 7 miles from here, there's a huge homeless camp of people who are living in facilities just like this. And we want to bring them some things and try to help them out. And it's a great thing, and it's a huge step forward. But we all realize that it's just one step forward in a really long journey towards emptying ourselves. If there's anything in Jesus' teaching that could change the world probably overnight, is if we embrace the idea to love our neighbor as ourselves. To begin to think proactively about doing things for others. Because it is, let's just acknowledge it, right? It is so hard to do that. Because Jesus gives us this example where he does it to the point, not just where he wants to make sure that everybody else is up to par with him, but he actually says, no, I want to make sure they're above me, that they're better than me, that I'll humble myself to them and wash their feet, that I'll make sure that I serve for them. This is a challenging lesson. It makes number one a little bit easier to understand. Of course it's difficult, because at the heart of Jesus' message is this idea that we need to empty ourselves and be humble and serving other people. I got things to do, right? I got my own stuff. I got my own problems. I have time for your problems. And the message of Christ is, their problems are your problems. So the message of Christ is to eat at the cafeteria with people that nobody else wants to eat with. It's to talk to the super annoying person at work that everybody else avoids. It's to not roll your eyes when everybody else rolls their eyes when this person comes involved, because it's like Jesus is in the back of your mind saying, this is why you're here. This is why I've called you to be like me. And all of this, if it's not framed right, can sound not very fun. You may be thinking, it sounded a lot more interesting until you put it that way. It sounded a lot more exciting. It sounded better. And that's kind of the irony of Matthew. Because I think the third point is that the way of Jesus is a better way to live. Like in the midst of living not a selfish life, in the midst of a challenging road that is more narrow, where the gate is difficult to get through, that somehow Jesus at the same time makes that way sound better. Because for a minute, just think about all the people that you know who aren't Christians. Think about all the people. Maybe it's people in your family. Maybe it's people that you work with, people within your neighborhood. Just people who don't know the Lord the way that you know the Lord. And listen to these teachings from Matthew and try to tell me that if you share these teachings with that person, that they would say, no, I don't want any of that. I don't want anything. I mean, we hear it all the time. I don't want anything to do with church. I don't want anything to do with religion. I don't want to get involved in all that stuff. But tell me that if you heard these messages or shared these messages with those people, that you would get that same impression. Listen to some of these teachings from Matthew. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Don't judge, or you also will be judged. For in the same way that you judge others, the same measure you use, it will be measured to you. So in everything that you do, do to others as you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. What kind of man is this that even the winds and the waves obey him? The one passage that just really stuck in my head all week, I shared it on Facebook, and it's just kind of ringed in my ears all week. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon me and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go look for that one who wandered off? And if he finds it, I tell you the truth, he is happier about that one sheep than the other 99 that did not wander off. Who is going to hear those teachings and go, I don't want any of that? I'd rather have a God who just lets the sheep wander off and doesn't care about them. I'd rather have a God who doesn't obey or doesn't force the storms and the winds to obey. Who doesn't want to be part of a society that doesn't judge each other harshly. That at the heart of their religion is really just two commandments. Just love God and just love each other. And if you did that, you could change the world. And we spend all this time talking about all these different things. And what we have to do when we read the book of Matthew is keep in mind, it all centers, the law and the prophets, everything you talked about in Exodus, everything you talked about in Acts, it all comes down, do you love God? Do you love each other? Because when we're truly honest with ourselves, when we're in the most conflict with people, it's because we're not loving them. That doesn't mean we agree all the time and sing kumbaya. You can disagree with people and love them, but more times than not, that's not how our society functions. More times than not, we're bickering and we're fighting and we dehumanize the person that we're upset with or the person we disagree about. You know, and we'll be talking about politics a lot this year because it's going to be in our faces constantly, but what does politics do? It dehumanizes the other person, right? You slap a label on them, you slap their image on them, and it doesn't matter where you're coming from, your objective is to dehumanize the other person. I challenge you this month, spend time in Matthew and let the book of Matthew and the teachings of Jesus permeate our lives to a point that somehow we look like Jesus' doppelganger. Somehow people are going, and they may not know Jesus, they may not know that's who you look like, but I guarantee they're going to say, you look weird. You act weird. Why are you not engaging in this like everybody else? And that's our window. That's our opportunity to say, I'm just trying to be like Jesus Christ. And I stink at it. I'm not very good at it, but I'm trying. And if we could just figure that out, people will take notice. Because the big challenge for the church in America right now is that we don't look any different than anybody else. And so I don't know about you, but I don't have any time for stuff that isn't going to be any different than anything else that I'm already dealing with. But if I find that one thing, it's going to change my life. If I change that one thing, that's going to make me a happier person. That's going to make my life better. And that's why I saved this last point for last. Because I think what I want you to wrestle with this morning as we kind of finish up here, is your life better because you know Jesus? Is it better? Because I've met a lot of people in churches who isn't, their life isn't better. Because they're so caught up in other things that they let their attention shift from Jesus in the beginning. And so we got to get back. We like to focus on Paul. We like to focus on Acts. We like to focus on all those other things. And we can have discussions and debates about how you're supposed to live your life and what you're supposed to think about all this. But it all comes down to Jesus Christ. That's the reason why the disciples were known as Christians, people who were like Christ. And I'm convinced that the only way to do this is to spend time with them. You have the DNA in your system. You have that. You're in God's image. But there's a nurture part of who we are to our identities. And the only way to nurture our identity is, I think this is why the church is here, because we should spend time with each other. If you're looking for a purpose or a reason why we do small groups, it's for this purpose. It's because you need to be nurtured by the people that are here. Like, you have things about your life that helps me live my life better for Christ. And I have ways and perspectives in my life, and the way I live my life will help you live your life for Christ. And we need each other. That's how we nurture each other and nourish our faiths. But it's not just that. You got to spend time in the book. That's why we're doing that this year. You got to spend time in Matthew. I spent time this week reading through the Sermon on the Mount. And I think next week we're probably going to focus on the Sermon on the Mount. And I got to thinking, I don't know if there's any single teaching, chapter 5, 6, and 7 of Matthew, there's any teaching that you could give to pretty much anybody and say, you want to be part of this? And the answer is probably going to be, yeah, I don't want to be part of a group of people who murder each other or lust after each other all the time or break their covenants with each other or on and on and on, judge each other, all the things that are included in Matthew. And so let's spend time and focus on that text and the rest of Matthew and ask ourselves this week, how are we allowing this Messiah to change our lives, to actually change our lives? Because in the end, he's the Messiah that saves us. And that's what we're going to sing about this morning. And so I'd invite you to stand up with us and